Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's December 6, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal here in New York City. We got some great guests in the house and a big fan of Nongnia, one of the first craft breweries out of Norway that we met years ago. And B.R. Sheldon from B.R. Royer from Sheldon Brothers brought him in. So it's great to have you back on the show, B.R.
Thanks, Jimmy.
You brought quite a few special guests the last couple months.
We have. I feel like I'm sort of this is the unofficial Sheldon Brothers house now.
We had Daniel Thierrier from Thierrier in France. Who else did you bring in recently?
We also had the cherry winemakers from Friedrichsdale in Denmark. And Sebastian Sauer from Freigeist, Germany.
Those are some great shows. Really appreciate working with you. It's nice to have you.
Glad we can bring you some guests.
Big shout out to our sponsors, Union Beer, distributor, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. Check us out on Instagram. We did an Instagram takeover on Friday at @beer_sessions. We were Instagramming from the Heritage Radio Network Instagram. We did a Belgian beer tasting at Jimmy's Number 43. Had some great things going on. So let's go around the room. So we got our good buddy, Chris Bala, who's from Grand Army Bar. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How are you?
So you worked in beverage a long time.
Yeah.
And I know that you did meet the Nongnia guys years ago.
It was when I first started working at Beercraft in Park Slope. But it was sort of a whirlwind because I was meeting brewers from everywhere and was very new to the scene. But yeah, I feel like Nongnia guys were pretty memorable. I've known the beers for ages. I feel like they're pretty unique and definitely very important in Scandinavia as far as how they kind of changed the landscape of craft brewing there. But yeah. Great.
And then you guys, Eric and Marshall from Braven, you guys say hi. And
hello.
Hi, how you doing?
And you guys are based out here in Bushwick. So we're going to talk about Nongnia, Norwegian craft beer, and the Norwegians who came to America, and also some of the history of brewing in Bushwick, Brooklyn with you guys. So
yeah.
And also Stephen Villan, our good buddy, just came in. Stephen, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy. Doing all right. How are you?
Good, man. How are things going at Brooklyn Brew Shop?
Oh, it's the holidays, so crazy as always. Yeah.
So you're doing market shipping?
Yeah, we just started a Union Square holiday market booth, so you know, anyone in need of a Christmas gift and want to make some beer,
there you go. Home brewing kit.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
Ready to go.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Beer making kits, and then we have some new like food fermentation kits, so you can make like bagels and cream cheese and beer cheese and pretzels and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Great. So our special guest, Tor from Nongnia in Norway. Tor, tell us about how you got started with craft beer in Norway.
I lived here in the States for nearly 6 years up in the Boston area when Boston Brewing Company was making other beers than just lager. And moving home, there was nothing to but lagers. So I started homebrewing quite early. And then I teamed up with Kjetil and Gunnar, who started Nongnia. I was what they call hang around in the beginning, and partly I became one of the partners and been hanging on since. So it's been a long, long 15 years, but it's been fun, really fun.
It's amazing that it's been that long. I remember in BR2, you guys brought Nongnia to Jimmy's Number 43, I think 2009. It was April 18th, there was a Norwegian beer tasting. We had herring on toast, we had cheese gaugers and some smørbrød.
Remember that? It was
really
fun.
And it was really like this at the time. You know, we know about guys like McKellar and Evil Twin, but back then, to me, you guys were really the real great craft beer that was coming out of Norway. What do you have to say about it, Bjørn?
Yeah, they were one of the first Nordic breweries that we worked with, and you know, it was very interesting because at the time, and Tore can speak more to this. In Norway, it was primarily just light lagers that were being mass-produced, and Nongnia was instrumental in introducing styles like IPA, porter, imperial stouts to the Norwegian public. They weren't commercially available there. So both important for the Norwegian brewing scene, and then really interesting to bring these beers into the U.S.
Yeah, we had to do export because the Norwegian market wasn't there. So, and lately, the last 5 or 6 years, the Norwegian market had kind of exploded. So it's been very much focusing on the Norwegian market. But now again, we are looking out again to have a higher presence here.
I mean, for me, like I said, when you guys first started, I thought your beers were great. A friend of mine just posted on Facebook that he says, gosh, I remember that Nognio IPA was the first beer that I ever tasted her at Jimmy's Number 43. So, yeah. And for Chris, too, you must have some memories.
I mean, my memory, I hadn't really experienced strong beers with, like, across the whole spectrum until I found these beers. My memory of Nognio was that most of it was quite strong and complex, and I think that was one of their barley wines. I think that kind of blew my mind before a whole lot else, you know. And I think it kind of directed my attention more to Europe with beers like that. But yeah, that's definitely my memory. A lot of very unusual. I remember the Sunturn Brew was really something that kind of blew my mind early, which is a smoky barley wine, but.
We have a version that I touched just now. It's a Sunturn blend, which is a Sunturn brew as base, and then mixed with some winter ale that's been in both whiskey and bourbon barrels.
Yeah.
Quite complex, quite nice.
I would like to try that. Yeah.
But you know, when I first met you guys, there weren't as many really great craft beers coming out of Europe. But now there's a lot more competition. I know, I'm sure that some people in this room have never even heard of Nognio. So, you know, what do you guys hear? You're trying to... You're doing some promotions in the state right now, BR?
Yeah, we did. We had an event on Sunday at Tørst with some special kegs. The Tørst is actually in the U.S. because they have every year do a big event at the Norwegian Embassy down in D.C. So he's heading down there tomorrow and doing an event at Church Key. But yeah, it always helps whenever we have people from the brewery come through. It really helps us because we take them to bars and stores and restaurants, and for the buyers to meet the people who are making the beer, you know, it sticks out in their mind if they're confronted with, you know, 10 distributor reps walking through and all of them have a bunch of different beers. When we show up with someone who's actually arrived from a different country talking about the beers and explaining the history of the beer, you know, they're able to put a face to the brewery, which, you know, any little thing helps, especially, you know, now that there's so many domestic breweries as well doing some fantastic beers. So people are like, well, why should we buy imports? And, you know, imports still have a lot to offer. And it's nice for people to meet the people who are doing the beers.
It's great to see the different places, too. I mean, it evolves all the time.
And Stephen, so you make some beer kits with different recipes, and, you know, you have a book about beer recipes. Have you ever tried to make a Nognio-inspired beer?
I mean, I brought with us an Imperial Peppermint Porter, so just kind of something that you might find just like a spiced dark, super dark beer that is really popular in Scandinavia. And I'm just thinking back to my wife Erica and I and partner visited Oslo a few years ago. It was, I think, the Wednesday before Easter, and to show kind of how Norwegians approach alcohol, their actual chains across the beer cabinets and like in the grocery store. And we got there and we had to say, like, please, we just landed. Can you, like, we're couch surfing. Can you let us have some beer? And we got through they let the chains off, and we got Tuborg, which was pretty much the only beer we could find. And it's just a Danish light lager. And then after a few days, we brought our hosts to a craft beer bar, and think they had your beer for the first time, and this was in Oslo. So it's if we think about how quickly, like, appreciation for craft beer is growing here, it's in magnitudes faster in places like Norway.
Have you started making some beer kits for people to make their own beer at home? And being a home brewer, trying to promote that, has been part of the success of the quick rise in the craft beer market back in Norway.
Mm-hmm. So, and then your original founder, one of the brewers, I can't pronounce the names, man. You got to help me out, PR. Kjetil
and Gunnar, they were the two who started.
So one guy was an airline pilot, so he got to travel the world
and
try different beers.
That's been very important for us, too. I mean, at that time, he traveled a lot to the west coast of the U.S., met a lot of people over there, like Dick Cantle from Elysian, and all the great guys that's been there for started up the business over that side.
And Eric and Marshall here, they're starting a brewery here in New York. And Marshall, you had an anecdote about some friends in Norway.
Oh, yeah, actually, I was at one of our accounts in Midtown. It was a hotel just on Friday. And I was talking with the bartender about our beer. And this guy sitting next to me, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You own a brewery?" I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, I'm from Norway, and I'm from a town of 20,000 people, and home brewing is huge right now." And that's how Eric and I got started as well. We started brewing in his apartment 7 years ago. And he said that, you know, it's so popular because taxes are so high, like we mentioned, on alcohol, that now they have a homebrew shop for their town of 20,000, and we have that many homebrew shops in New York City practically at this point. So he said it's really, really popular right now.
And what's it been like for you guys? I mean, you're a very small country. The language is different. I have a hard time pronouncing your names. And, you know, how have you guys grown, been able to grow and export? But you're also growing in your country, too, now, aren't
you? Yeah, no. I mean, we didn't have enough base when in the beginning, so we had to do export. And luckily, we got a good contract with Denmark quite early. And at one point, mid-2000, we had an export percentage of about 80%. Today it's around 15, I guess, but it's not the volume is still increasing. But we have a tremendous growth back home just because of the interest.
But you guys are different. You're Scandinavian, but you're not Danish. You're not from Copenhagen. You're not Stockholm. I mean, you're a different culture, aren't you?
The languages, we understand each other perfectly, so it's no language barrier. And we all have good friends. I mean, it's a Scandinavian community. Yeah. Just here. Was at the Norwegian American Chamber of Commerce. We couldn't find it because it had Scandinavian.
You all blended together. I know one reason I invited Stephen to come years ago, we talked about, you know, there's a lot of Norwegians who live in America or of descent. And you're from a Norwegian community, aren't you, Stephen?
Yeah, my grandparents are actually from Kristiansand, okay. Which is less than an hour, I think, from your brewery. And I'm from Bay Ridge, which was very Norwegian. I think in the 70s, New York City was actually the biggest Norwegian-speaking or had the largest Norwegian-speaking community outside of Norway. My family built the Lutheran Church, so we always grew up with Norwegian flags everywhere for every holiday, pretty much. And, you know, we went to the parade on the 17th of May, which is basically like the Norwegian Constitution Day.
Yeah, I mean, we just have 5 million people back home. And at one time, nearly half the population, late 1800, they moved to the States. So actually, there's more Norwegian heritage people in the States than there is in Norway now.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's hard to get excited about Norway, but the reason you're here is because I've always loved your beer. So let's talk about the beer we're drinking right now.
This is a Citra Pale Ale. It's a regular pale ale. And the dry hop with Citra. So it's a session ale. It's just something we did very recently to have a lighter side than the heavy IPAs and so on.
That's great. And beer, what other non-neo beers did you bring?
The other one actually is one that Tora brought from Norway that we don't have available in the U.S. right now. It's one of their Christmas beers.
Let's pop that, too, and we can talk about that.
Yep.
So you make so many beers. I mean, for a small brewery, you guys make – I've had saisons from you, IPAs, barley wines.
Yeah, that's our strength and also our biggest headache. I mean, thinking of you have to have different labels for different countries and so on, and logistically it doesn't make sense. But the diversity and the magnitude was what are one of our core values. So have a lot of different styles and so on. Just do make whatever you want, what you think is fun. This was the whole company was based on.
Chris, you know, you from working at Beercraft and Mile End and now Grand Army Bar, I mean, how do you, you know, if a beer like Nonio comes in, are you just judging it, you know, as a good beer, a craft beer? Are you trying to position it as a Norwegian beer, you know?
I mean, I feel like my first experience is it was definitely the playing field was much smaller, I feel like, than when I started in 2011. And when this brewery was kind of making a big name for itself in America. But, I mean, the way I always kind of remembered Nogno is that It's hard to find beers with such great malt character. I felt like I had a really hard time drinking really heavy beers because I felt like the malt character was quite rough. But yeah, I you know, idiosyncratic. I mean, like maybe with strong connections to you know, historical drinking, like Nordic drinking, that is, you know, a little more unusual or different than that those of Germany or Belgium. But I, you know, it's still kind of a mystery to me. I wish I had kind of done a little more research before coming here. But I think that's, you know, the beauty of these sessions here. But yeah, the malt character is what's always stuck in my mind.
I think we're all learning,
you know,
together. Chris.
Yeah, we are.
So,
yeah,
so. But it's a good thing we have BR here, because BR is kind of the beer whisperer for all these different far-flung, you know, we've had French, Czech, you know, New Zealand, Norwegian brewers here. What's your take on Nanyo? Like, how do you sell it to people besides bringing the guys around? I mean, is there like a recipe that they stick with? Are they using classic ingredients?
Well, I mean, it's the beer scene has evolved so much. I mean, we used to do extremely well with their IPA and some of their other more traditional, or I should say, just beer styles that a lot of craft brewers are making. And now that a lot of those are available locally, you know, they're less expensive. You're getting them fresh from the brewery. We find with all of our brewers that we now, you know, need to focus on something that's a little bit more unique. And so some of these darker, heavier beers are still popular. The Imperial Stout always does well for us. And now they have someone, Stephen Andrews, who used to be over at Brooklyn Brewery, is now running their barrel program. So we're getting a lot more of blends. We get the beer from them, the Tinved with Sea Buckthorn. So things that are sort of a little bit make the brewery more Nordic than simply just, oh, it's a craft brewery that happens to be from Norway. Now it is a Norwegian craft brewery doing things that are either a sense of place in terms of local ingredients or else doing some really nicely balanced barrel-aged products. You know, they're not just big, big, big boozy bombs, but there's, as Chris was saying, the malt character is really nice, you know, and then the nice barrel character that, you know, and Tara can speak more of how they're going on now with that barrel program. But those are the things we're focusing on.
That's great. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, heritageradionetwork.org. It's the end of your membership drive. Check it out. Stephen Valland from Brooklyn Brew Shop is one of our new business members. Thanks for joining, Stephen.
Of course. You do a great service for the beer community.
Well, so. We love Heritage Radio Network. There's so many great shows out there. There's shows about eating and food and chefs and cheese and cocktails. And so thanks for joining, man.
Of course. Everyone should.
That's right. So we're tasting this great, what is it, the Nanyo Christmas beer?
Yeah, we call it Yule Quad. So I guess the name tells you that it's based on a quadruple. So it's a sweet Christmas beer, like a dessert, quite strong, 11 ABV. So just to say a little bit more, the Christmas season in Norway, the Christmas season is the big beer season. So we have about, 60% of our sales is in the last 4 months. So that's how heavy it's.
You know, I don't really order Christmas beers. There's so many Belgian, especially Christmas beers. I usually order like the quads and the imperial stouts. That I don't always want to have too much unnecessary spicing, but this doesn't have a lot of spice.
No spices here. No.
Yeah.
No.
Stephen, how do you taste this? To me, it tastes like a quad. It tastes like a quad with a little more something in there, barrel or something.
Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of stone fruit, a lot of nice, like, soft caramel. I think it's perfect for keeping the reindeer at bay, I would say.
Good one, man. Everybody's fresh today. I'm not that fresh. You know, yesterday there was a New York State craft beverage talk yesterday with the Union Square Green Market, and I heard some good people. Jason from Strong Rope, some of our buddies were talking. So I think I was thinking a lot about ingredients and you know, local New York stuff. But now we're jumping to holiday beer. So, Chris, how do you taste this?
I mean, I feel like some of the same sentiments about it. I really love that almost like caramelized malt flavor. I don't know if that was from, you know, intense boiling or something like that, but that's definitely what I'm getting in the Belgian tradition. But
there's some Muscovado sugars.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I love Belgian holiday beers that don't include spices but have, you know, such an intense spicy character, either from like yeast phenols or you know, that caramel from like intense boiling. So it's, I mean, I really enjoy it.
This is getting me in the mood for Christmas, I'll tell
absolutely.
You that. So, Marshall, we were talking about some of the places that tour is going down to D.C.
Yeah, you mentioned something about going to Church Key on 14th Street. That's my old neighborhood, so I'm happy to hear you're going there.
Yeah, tomorrow, Greg Eckhart was very kind to put on some cakes tomorrow. So looking very much forward to that.
B, are you going to D.C. also?
No, unfortunately, I have to stay here, but my colleague Christian's going to be down there handling the DC market.
So, yeah, so, I mean, what is it like for you guys? You went to tourists in New York City, you stopped by Jimmy's number 43. I mean, how do you pick the bars and places that you bring guys
basically
like
whoever's in on the day that someone from the brewery is in town? It's basically based on the buyer schedule, pretty much. I mean, we try to hit up both a combination of places who know the brewery and who are supporters of the brewery, just to bring them by, and then also introduce them to new places who might not be familiar with the beer, who it's like, or who've never ordered it and said, "Oh, I don't know." And then you say, "But you should have this beer," and then you or beer from this brewery, and then bring them by to introduce them.
Yeah, I have a very long list. I got to wear some new shoes now. It's there's so many nice places and people that I met before and new people. It's really nice to come out and meet where the beer is present.
So, what are some of the other major industries in Norway? I have to ask you that question.
Oh. Yeah, in the Norwegian, the American Norwegian Chamber of Commerce, there's some huge companies, of course, defense contracts, and salmon is
so popular. Salmon's available.
Salmon is, and Jarlsberg cheese, of course, it's a Tina cheese. Oh, there's quite a few, actually.
Oil, too, right?
Oil-based, of course.
Just yesterday, Mariah Carey said that she only eats Norwegian salmon and capers, so... Okay.
So. That's awesome.
The world thanks you for that.
No other food or no other salmon?
No other food.
All right, then.
Well, we get some special things at Norway.
I get some beer as well, then.
Yeah. So then talking about selling beer, so you guys, Eric and Marshall, you guys are starting out. How long have you been selling Braven beer now?
We'll be 2 years in January.
But you're still making it somewhere else.
Yeah, we're still brewing in upstate New York at Saratoga.
But you've learned a lot about selling beer to bars and accounts, haven't you?
Yeah, I think a month is like a year in a regular job. Just walking around and, like we were just talking about before, going to different bars and how you guys make your schedule visiting from another country. We have to do that on a daily basis, just visiting from up the street. And I think you get a very similar treatment of people who either know the brand, want to know the brand, don't want to know the brand and you want them to know the brand, or people you're just like, all right, that was fun talking to you, but we're just going to go.
Well, let's pop some beer too while you guys are talking.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, because like, I mean, tourists here, I know you've been here in the States before. I mean, what are there pointers for him that he might have when he's, I mean, he's got a BR, so he's got all the doors open to him.
Sure. Well, I think, I mean, beer, and this is, I think, universal and something that we loved about beer when we got started, and homebrewing especially is this entree into it. It is very much a social drink. Everything is relationships in this business. Everything is relationship in every business. But really in New York, I think the more times you give people the attention and the time to really talk to them about what they're caring about, like what's going on in their market and what do they think, they're going to react well to your product either way. Even if they don't like it, but they like you, you have a much better shot of getting in. And I think it really comes down to how you interact with them and if they can sell the product, of course.
And now we've talked to you before, right when you were open about two years ago.
Yeah.
We had you on Beer Sessions Radio. So
yeah,
there's
we were
that
here
show
in our,
out there.
I think 6 weeks or 8 weeks after we sold our first keg, we were in here with some Blickman beer gun filled growlers that got stale the second we opened them.
And we didn't even have a Blickman beer gun yet.
Oh, it was off the kegerator?
It was. It felt professional to us at the time, but looking back, it now seems pretty amateur. We've come a long way, I think, since then. But yeah, that was when we just had the white IPA. That was the first beer we started with. It's our hybrid of a Belgian white American IPA. We discovered that style when we were out in Denver a number of years ago, visiting my sister, going to a lot of breweries out there. And since then, we've started doing two other styles year round. We have the Bushwick Pilsner and the Black Pale Ale.
And just a little milestone, actually, since we're talking about 2 years, in mid-November, we sold the equivalent of our 1 millionth pint of beer. So we were sitting down maybe a year ago, and Marshall said, I wonder how many of these we've sold. Like, I wonder how many pint glasses of beer we've sold. So we started doing the math on it. We keep track of where the sales are going, and we projected it out, and we surprised someone at one of our favorite accounts, just kind of came up behind someone like, boo, you're our 1 millionth pint. And luckily, he had already had a six-pack of our beer in his fridge earlier that day, and that was not something we planned, which is, of course, much better than surprising a stranger who doesn't want to talk to you. So that worked out very well for us.
That's kind of funny. Congratulations, man. I mean, I've never heard anyone say that.
Well, I love the signs at McDonald's because I love McDonald's. And just knowing how many millions of burgers or how many millions served or whatever, Marshall got the bug in his head a year ago to start tracking it, and we just kind of kept an eye on it. And then maybe this summer we put a target on the board, like, all right, got to get to that date.
Yeah, I think I was sitting at a local bar called Left Hand Path, and when I was sitting at the bar drinking one of my beers, it was a white IPA, I was, you know, hearing other people at the bar who I've never talked to before, they didn't know me personally, going up to the bartender and asking for a Braven white IPA. And that, to me, at the time, was just mind-boggling, that something that Eric and I had created from nothing, people were going and ordering it on its own merits. And so I started thinking about, you know, every day in this city, New York City is a pretty large town, we're selling a good amount of beer. I know how much we're selling every week. At any given moment, there are how many strangers that I've never met before ordering our pints and enjoying it and going back for a second and third. And that was just, I guess, really inspiring for me, that it was beyond just our friends and family that were supporting us. There were people ordering it because they liked it.
Well, congratulations. And I ran into you at a recent New York City Craft Beer Festival, and you were one of the few actual brewery owners that was there. Most they were volunteers serving product. You know, what's your take on working at festivals and meeting new customers?
No doubt it's a bit of a grind to have to go out, especially when you stack up festivals on a weekend. But for speaking for Marshall and speaking for myself, I think there's no better chance to meet your customer face-to-face. And we don't have our own tap room, so we can't necessarily have that conversation with people when they come in. But we get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people either trying our beer for the first time, the second time, or for the millionth time. And they get to tell us exactly what they think about us, the brand, and we can ask them specific questions. And that kind of feedback is really valuable just for what we're doing. But I hear the beer being
poured.
Sounds good,
Steve.
Yeah. That's our Bushwick Pilsner. I can tell by the
sound. Welcome back, Steve. We miss you,
bro. I can tell by the sound that that's the Bushwick Pilsner.
Good to see you.
But really, really for us, it's more FaceTime than we're ever going to get with a consumer on a day-to-day basis.
Chris, how do you buy beer? I mean, you know your beer. You probably have a list in your head. I know how it works.
Very intense, confusing process that I've developed over a number of years. I taste a lot of beer. I do a lot of research. I try to meet as many people as I can. But yeah, at the moment I'm buying for a cocktail bar, which is a little different. And I only have 8 draft lines, so I try to, my challenge is kind of the conceptualize what kind of complements a, you know, very elevated cocktail program. And for me, that kind of tends to be very classic and identifiable style-wise. But yeah, I just buy good beer. I'm very unforgiving to distributors and producers. But yeah, I mean, it's always an adventure, you know. I'm always trying new things. You know, sometimes I'm very surprised by beers. And, you know, just never believe the hype, you know. It's all about the beer you're drinking. But yeah, I don't know. I have a pretty unique process, I think. And I know most of my distributors think I'm a big pain in the butt. But yeah, it's kind of all over the place.
And for a limited list, I do really like the beers you typically choose.
Oh, thank you so much.
As someone in your neighborhood.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And let's talk more about Oslo and Norway. So salmon, oil.
Hell.
I know you guys are reticent, but, you know, it's funny because I think I remember when I was in like fourth grade, I read something about, had to write a report about Norway, and I remember drawing, I had to draw the whole country, you know, and all these fjords and things. I know what fjords, does everyone know what fjords are?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone does, right?
Yeah.
What are they?
Oh, we got some really long, long fjords, narrow and deep and so on, and that's where quite scarce populated.
What are they, Stephen?
I suppose they're glacial crevices. I actually, for my parents' anniversary, we just got them a cruise last year to go through the fjords. So it's what people do. They're very beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Have you been there, Bjorn?
I have not. As the Shelton Brothers manager of our French and Canadian breweries, I head up to Quebec and I head to France, and that's pretty much, unfortunately, the extent of my traveling, though I would love to visit Norway at some point. That's one European country
I've
never
been to. Who
started
that relationship with Shelton Brothers and Nugno?
Who started?
Yeah.
I believe it was Dan's brother, Will.
Dan and Will, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Dan, this was before I started with Shelton Brothers. We had already had the brewery in the portfolio, but yet.
You had contact with some other American distributors, and Will just jumped on the plane and came first. That's pretty
much like the Amazing Race. I mean, get to the brewery first.
That's my experience with Shelton Brothers. I mean,
but that's pretty much the experience we have had so far with other countries as well. I mean, you just meet people and talk, and that's how it goes. We never do any research or anything. It's just meeting good friends in the business.
Tell them about the fjords and the salmon.
Yeah.
I love your guys' beer. So, you know, we just had the Brave and the Bushwick Pills. We're going to come back in a few minutes and talk more about history of beer in Bushwick, too, on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, Beer, what'd you say? You don't think Chris is a...
Oh, that was supposed to be... That was off the record.
A
no.
tough buyer?
No,
tough
I was saying... Buyer. No, he says that he's apparently has a difficult reputation, but we like him. But that's because he takes our beers, so...
All right, let's do this, guys. Everyone, let's get a couple questions from the room for Tor about Nognio or Norway or sales or export or something. Marshall, I know you got a question. Come on.
Sure. Well, you know, since we're so new and you've been in the game for a long time, what would your advice be for a new brewery? What was maybe some pain points you had for the early time of your brewery?
I don't know. I mean, the first time in the brewery, the first 4 years, I'm sure you experienced the same thing. It's kind of hard to remember back what actually did. I think it's just going so fast.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just hang in there and don't give up. It's I remember Kjetil said, if someone asks me, would you do it again? And he would give you the advice, no, never start up, never do it. But, I mean, it's perseverance that counts. It's, you just have to hang in there and do what you like. That's pretty much what you have to do.
Next question.
Sure. So now it's really, I wouldn't say trendy, but people understand Scandinavian cuisine is a thing. And when I was younger, it was lutefisk, which is, you know, I think what people always thought of as like Norwegian and Scandinavian food. It wasn't mostly that appealing. And so while your beer is particularly good with food, and it does have a, like, yeah, it is oriented around.
We have always tried to pair up beer with food. And lutefisk, as you mentioned, which is a fish prepared in lye. Mm-hmm. It's all the commitments around it, the akevitt and the beer and the bacon fat, and that's what makes the taste.
So do you think the conversations changed, or has it made it easier to say, like, this is a Norwegian beer, it goes well with your food because Scandinavian food is now is respected and it's, well, it's something you want?
We've just been part of a research program funded by some of the agriculture authorities back in Norway. We try to find the, shall we say, Norwegian terroir, and find that back to older styles and so on. And what the only thing we found so far is the old yeast, the kveik, and we use that in a couple of our new beers. And that's quite interesting, going back like that. Kveik has been popular in both in Norway from way, way back, and also in the Baltics, Lithuania especially.
Pierre, what's a question that some of your buyers ask you about Nonio?
How to pronounce the name. They want the beer with the O, is what they say.
Nagnio. And what does that mean? It's like some kind of island.
No, Nøgne means naked, and Ø is actually another word for the island. You know, we have three more vowels in the Norwegian alphabet, so it's kind of a little play on the letters and also the words. So it's nothing beer-related, actually.
You guys have some deep culture. You know, you've got, you know, salmon. We read about Iceland's collapse from the last few years, and it was a nation of fishermen. So there's deep values and deep traditions. One of your famous writers was Henrik Ibsen. You know, how does that relate to your cultural psyche or something?
Well, he wrote a poem about Terry Vegan, and that's it's actually a very good story. Much too long. It's a story on I think close to 40 verses, but it tells you about helping the next guy when he's troubled, even if you have been hurt by him at an earlier stage. So it really it reflects the craft business. I mean, you always help the next guy. I remember first time as I was over here in the States, like 10 years ago, visiting breweries. They always dropped whatever they had and welcomed in, helped you out, any questions, no secrets. And that's what we try to convey back home to other breweries starting up as well. It's very much camaraderie, and it's so important. And that's what's helped the quick growth of the whole business.
That's great. And then I know a few years ago, you guys, you have either a new partner or a new relationship in the business.
There's no secret. Kjetil and me, we didn't agree on everything, and Kjetil wanted out. So he sold part of his shares to one of the other Norwegian breweries. And that's actually been a success for us. We have had a better distribution and so on, and It's been okay, and they have been letting us do what we do. If you look back, you can see what after they bought in, they have actually started to make an IPA and other styles. So we have sort of affected them more than they have affected us.
So now you really are influencing the Norwegian beer culture.
Even the larger lager breweries are starting to make craft and other styles. So it's they see that's where the trend is going. So It's a completely different change just from the last three years.
So earlier we said that Stephen, your family was Norwegian and you grew up in Bay Ridge, or they grew up in Bay Ridge. So that was a big Norwegian community. But we also know that in Bushwick, where we are now, this was one of the had a lot of breweries in New York in the 19th century. That's your cue, Eric, because I know your Pilsner is called Bushwick Pils.
Well, we rehearsed this for an hour beforehand, so I'm ready to go. Yeah, back in the 1800s, Bushwick was home to a great number of German immigrants, and they brought with them their brewing tradition and also the hot style at the time, which was the Czech style and then German style Pilsner. And as much as everyone is obsessed with IPA today, I like to think that it's a bit of a, you know, it's the new popular style. Pilsner was taking the world, well, Europe at the time, taking Europe by storm. And here you go. It was a race to get the openers out. And we started in Bushwick for a number of reasons. One being that we love the neighborhood, we love the energy here, we love the artist community, we love all of the development that's going on, and like just so much cool stuff happening with great restaurants and great people moving in. And it also
sitting in right now.
Yes, we're sitting in Roberta's and in the back house doing a radio show by a pizza oven. So that's the kind of cool stuff that you can do here. And it also had this great brewing tradition from the 1800s, and we wanted to draw on that. Back in the late 1800s especially, there was over two dozen breweries in Bushwick, many of them along Bushwick Avenue. It was nicknamed Brewer's Row, and Prohibition really knocked out the whole industry. And it shifted more to a Midwest style because they had the operations, and they had the refrigerated trucks, and they had all the infrastructure to support brewing coming back. But New York was a very local brewing tradition back then. You rolled the kegs up the street if you rolled them anywhere at all. So when we were designing our first beers, we had the white IPA, like Marshall mentioned. It was a style we fell in love with when we were traveling out west. Our black pale ale as well is another one of those homebrew specials. It's a hybrid style between more of an English kind of richer malt pale ale, but give it that American hop flavor and throw in some more roasted malts to give it a chocolatey coffee flavor. It was really just one of those things that we were like, this seems cool, let's do it. But the Bushwick Pilsner, very much inspired by the Bushwick beers of the late 1800s. And we found this old article from Brewing Techniques magazine that someone had lovingly transcribed onto a 1990s GeoCities website in awful formatting, but it was good enough for us to get a sense of this history that seemed lost. We're like, this is amazing. This is the neighborhood that we already love and that we're hanging out in. And we had no idea. So we dug into it a little bit more and found that breweries like Schaefer, Tromers, Peel's, Rheingold, all these amazing breweries back in the day that got hurt by Prohibition, never really came back, brewed these Bushwick-style pilsners. So we took the through line on a lot of the old recipes that the article talked about and really took like what we thought was the thesis of everything that they were doing, updated it very little for today's flavors. We still use pretty much the same ingredients that they were using back in the 1910s. We switched from 6-row to 2-row just because 6-row can gum up some systems if you're not careful with it, and still use about 16% flake corn in there, which was a very traditional ingredient and something that is a bit divisive in the brewing community. I think that it's come back around, that it's a more traditional ingredient and it gives it a certain characteristic flavor. And we've been very happy with the reception that we've gotten so far, not just because of the history, not just because of the name, but it's a flavor in craft beer that I think is starting to take a little bit more of a hold. That old school American style Pilsner really rounds out a portfolio for a brewery, and it really rounds out a portfolio for a bar.
And it's funny that it highlights the fact that almost every old, cool beer sign comes from Bushwick. So even before Prohibition, Bushwick was pretty hip.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
And one of the cool things, yeah, exactly. And still to this day, when you tell people about the history, people that live in Bushwick and have for 5-10 years, most of them have never even heard about the brewing history here. It's like literally surrounding us where we're sitting right now. There used to be all these breweries everywhere, and there are only, I think, to my knowledge, about two of the brick-and-mortar breweries still standing. So all the history has really been wiped away. But if you talk to people like native New Yorkers, people who've lived here their whole lives, their family have been here for generations, they'll say like, oh, my grandfather's beer was Rheingold. I used to sit on his lap while he would sip Rheingold. Or someone told me the other day that their parents used to let her sip the foam off of the Schaefer. that was their introduction to drinking. But it's cool to even expose people to this history of brewing in New York City.
Does everyone have the pills? Tor, what do you think of this pills? Does this taste like a Scandinavian lager to you?
Well, it was.
Did you have this pills?
I was surprised. Yeah, that was what the taste. I couldn't really. But when you said corn, I got it right away. It's nice. I liked it. But it's something that you get to get used to. If you think you're having a regular pilsner as we know it, and get this, you have to be introduced the right way.
And then, Chris, you just popped a sour beer for us. Let's just go through. And Steven brought a beer, too, so let's just finish up the beers.
Yeah, I brought a weird thing from Colorado that was hanging out in my fridge. It's Trinity Brewing out of their Colorado Springs. This is their Red Swingline IPA Primitif. I think this is a 3-year-old. They call it IPA, but I think it's just a very funky wild ale that's heavily dry hop before.
It's nice. Do a lot of people just bring beer to you?
No, I purchased that actually a few years ago. I feel like right when they're starting to, maybe like 2 years ago, right when they're coming in to New York. But yeah, people do bring me beer quite a bit. It's sort of hard to keep track of it, and I often just share it with bar staff and all that. But
great, man. And Steven, you brought a beer too. So tell us about Brooklyn Brew Shop one more time.
Yeah, so we brought an Imperial Peppermint Porter. So one of the new mixes we have out this holiday season is a Peppermint Porter. So we just went a little bit further and made it higher in alcohol. It's actually brewed with peppermint candies and then dry minted. So you toss in some fresh spearmint into the fermenter. This one we aged a bit, so you know some of the mint's going to fall off, but some of the smoothness. But
this tastes like what a holiday ale could be.
Yeah, because you know 'tis the season, so let's celebrate.
So beer, what, wrap it up for us. So again, going back to Nonio, and it was 2009. They came to Jimmy's number 43. We had a Norwegian beer tasting. Met the whole team and have a great appreciation for them. Fast forward now, and actually this is the theme of our show next week, kind of like beers that 10 years ago were on everyone's top list, and now we're trying to remember what they are. You know, what's it like for you guys now with Nongnio?
Well, I mean, like I said, they're going in a little different direction than when we first started working with them. You know, when we first started out, it was their IPA, their Saison, their Porter, Imperial Stout, which we still carry and do well with, but we are, as I was saying earlier, moving on to more of their barrel age products, things that are like to just get a little bit, make them stand out a little bit more, because there's really, whether it's from Nu Nu or any of our other imported breweries, there's really no reason to bring an IPA into the U.S. at this point. Back then it was something that people wanted IPAs, so we were bringing in a lot of IPAs, but now there's so many great IPAs that are being brewed locally, whether it's in New York City, Brooklyn, or around the country. So yeah, we're just, you know, as they expand their offerings, we're working with them to bring in some more of the unique things that they have.
So. Great. And then, so you said there's someone from Brooklyn Brewery who's now working in Norway for you guys.
Yeah, like Steven, he's been with a couple of other breweries here in the States. But when he moved from here, he was doing some of the barrels at Brooklyn Brewery. Yes, it's true. So he's been with us now for close to 2 years, doing a lot of good stuff over there.
Well, it's great having you on. Thanks so much for coming here. And
thank you.
Thanks for you came to. You were at Taurus on Sunday. Jimmy's number 43. Going to be at Church Key in D.C. tomorrow. And you came back to Heritage Radio Network. All right, man.
I'll be back soon. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
And just everyone go around the room. You guys give a quick plug to yourself and what you're doing. And also, big shout out John Lapolia at Bitter and Esters. He's got some cool things coming up in December. BitterandEsters.com, including a Josh Bernstein complete IPA book signing and an IPA bottle share coming up soon in December. So check it out, BitterandEsters.com. All right, guys. Tell us, let's wrap it up. Tell us your names and what you got going on.
Sure. This is Marshall Thompson from Braven Brewing Company. Like Eric said, we have a million pints going. We've looking forward to this winter. We're going to be coming out with some new seasonal beers. So we're looking at an orange habanero chocolate stout coming out for the winter season. So we're really excited about that.
So you're going to have the million pint March. No.
Yes, and we just started working with a couple of other artists, musicians around Brooklyn, doing kind of a celebrate your craft campaign. Not only just celebrate your craft beer, but celebrate what other people are doing also. It's a big focus for us is supporting arts and music institutions in Bushwick. That's so much of what Bushwick is about, so much of what we're about, and we're just going to keep that going.
Great, man. Thank you.
It's Chris Bala from Grand Army Bar in Borum Hill in Brooklyn. I guess in addition to my usual stuff, I'm also helping out Travis Kaufman at Folk's Beer get his brewery at Tasting Room up and running, which is very soon, in the next 2 weeks. So you might see me down there in addition to my
check that out.
Fancier digs.
Folksbeer.com, is there a website?
I think there's something like that. Yeah.
Something. It's in Brooklyn, somewhere over there.
It's in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn, just down the road from Prime Meats. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Tour. You here in America?
Yeah, I'll be back this fall, not this spring, because we have a collaboration lined up with Denali Brewing out of Alaska. They visited us, and we have to revisit them, of course, to do that. Excited to get up there.
And you're also in D.C. You're going to be what, at the embassy?
In D.C. at the embassy. That's a one event on Thursday, but Church Key tomorrow.
Great. Thanks, Tor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. Yeah, this is Stephen from Brooklyn Brew Shop. If anyone's interested in making their own beer for the first time so that they can open up a brewery in Bushwick or Norway or wherever, they should, you know, go to brooklynbrewshop.com. Or if they're in New York City, head to the Union Square Holiday Market. And if they're interested in weird other food fermentations, they should go to farmsteady.com, which is our brand new project.
Great, man. We're going to hear about that next time.
All right. B. Arolia with Shelton Brothers Importers, and I believe our next event is on this coming Sunday at Torst. We're going to have the guys from Jester King, Texas, coming up for a little draft takeover.
Keep it rolling. All right. And thanks to our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. Big shout-out to producer Justin Kennedy, engineer David Tadisher. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Woo.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.